If your job at a healthcare facility includes disinfecting against viruses, you know prevention is the best medicine. And maintaining healthy spaces starts with a healthy cleaning routine. Grainger's world-class supply chain helps ensure you have the quality products you need when you need them. From disinfectants and cleaning supplies to personal protective equipment, so you can help deliver a clean bill of health. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Why is life better with American Family Insurance? Because every policy comes with something very special. A trusted agent who's there to help protect your dreams by finding the right coverage at the right price. Save up to 23% when you bundle home and auto. American Family Insurance. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
As if they don't have too much on their plates. The Kings of Combat Sports Podcast, John and Wade. They talk about the things they did that day. The land of the work of Triple H.
We want to smack down. It is John Pollock and Neil Flanagan, and we welcome in everyone on the YouTube channel. It is the final SmackDown, the final WWE TV before WrestleMania at Allegiant Stadium coming up. We're going to be getting into everything that went down at the T-Mobile Arena on Friday night. Do want to alert everybody that is on the free feed that we have been doing WrestleMania week coverage all week long at postwrestlingcafe.com. I did shows with John Cena on Thursday and Friday. Today's show, we went through Collision. We went through TNA Unbreakable. We went through Josh Barnett's Bloodsport with John Kleinchester jumping on with us, and we reviewed the Mark Hitchcock Memorial Super Show featuring Butterbean versus Minoru Suzuki. Neil, have you made your way over to watch the match of the weekend?
I have not, unfortunately, John. I have, of course, been following the WrestleMania week shows with you and John Cena. But really, outside of the main promotions, all I've seen is Bloodsport, and that was sort of squeeze that in this afternoon effort on my part because I can't lose too much sleep. But there's a lot on my docket to catch up with.
That should just leapfrog above all else. Make some time for Butterbean and Minoru Suzuki. But yes, those shows are up Saturday. Busy day as always at Post Wrestling at noon Eastern time at postwrestlingcafe.com. Kate from Montreal and John Cena will be live. They're going to be chatting about the ongoing spring break, which is happening as we speak, and other highlights from today. I'm sure John will also be diving into DDT, which featured Minoru Suzuki, the man of the weekend in Vegas, taking on Yoshihiko, the wrestling doll. So lots to devour on the site on Saturday, because afterwards, after night one, myself and Neil, we will be live here on the YouTube channel moments after WrestleMania concludes, and we'll be breaking down everything after night one. And then on Sunday, Brayden and Davey will be live and free here on the channel with a review of Stand and Deliver at noon, and then Waiting. He graces us with his presence Sunday night. He will be with me as we review night number two. So we appreciate all the support at postwrestlingcafe.com. You can get all the WrestleMania coverage, 30 days access with a sign up, and a lot of great stuff to check out throughout the week, including the history of WrestleMania. Why go back and rewatch all the WrestleManias when you can have me just make sense of all of it for you in a nice compact 2.5 hours.
In a tight 2 hours, 20 something minutes. By the way, for viewers, I'm not crying. If you see me rubbing my eye, there's an eyelash or something stuck in there. So don't worry about me. I'm absolutely fine. It wasn't the 3 hours of SmackDown that did this.
I was crying when I heard this was a commercial-free first hour, so that was not an eyelash, but I'm glad that Neil has clarified for those that are watching here. So it's time to get into SmackDown from the T-Mobile Arena. Last number from WrestleTix, 16,139. Neil, you have been you have made the odd trip over here. You're watching all of the WrestleMania coverage from afar. Is there any part of you that would have been looking forward to being in Las Vegas with everything that's going on this weekend? Any of that, any FOMO on your part?
The honest answer is no this year, John. Often I do get a bit of FOMO, especially if people I know, largely through post, I have to say, are going to be there, or personal friends who are there as well. There are a few that fit into that bracket who are heading Vegas this weekend. But there isn't a big sort of critical mass of people I would maybe want to join. And I have to be honest, Las Vegas isn't my favorite destination in the world either. So when I heard right from early on, when I knew that was where they were going to be this year, it wouldn't have been top of my list. For New Orleans is much more appealing to me as a destination, for example. So perhaps next year.
Yep, that will be the site for next year's show. Let's get into everything. So during the arrivals, we got an angle because as Tama Tonga is arriving with Solo Sikoa, LA Knight jumps him and then slams a car door on his hand. And this takes Tama Tonga out in theory of the whole weekend, which LA Knight would establish. He was going to take them out one by one. So no Tama Tonga because of his hand. I don't know how that would prevent him from being in a corner, a broken hand, but he's gone. He's disappeared.
Yes, and we heard the words local medical facility for the first time.
Yes, you noticed that too. We did not. We got local medical facility, which was always a Vince-ism for hospital. Seth Rollins starts the show. This was a night of promos. And when you're going commercial free, a lot of people got a lot of promo time. So in comes Seth. He's getting Punk chance. He's getting OTC chance. And he sits down cross-legged in the middle. And he goes in on Punk stating he came back. He says he alleges he came back because of you chanting his name for 10 years. But when he chose to come back, he did not come back in a WWE ring and said, why did he come back? For you, the fans, or a big fat check? He says when he burned that bridge, he came to WWE again, not because of the fans, but because he got another big fat check. Tell me when I'm telling lies. He doesn't care about you, the fans. He's a liar, a fraud, and a coward. Reigns, on the other hand, doesn't even pretend to care about the WWE or its fans. He's got a private jet, limited schedule, and handpicked opponents, which I don't know what that says about him and Punk this weekend, if he's got handpicked opponents. But the crowd is singing for Roman and says that Punk and Reigns know nothing about sacrifice. It started 12 years ago when Heyman brought me, Roman, and Dean Ambrose to the WWE as a shield for CM Punk. I got no credit. Everyone wanted the spotlight on Reigns as the next big star. Punk left. I heard those chants while I was working every town, every night, sacrificing. Last year, while my knee was hanging by a thread and my father-in-law was dying of cancer, I still made it to WrestleMania to make sure Roman Reigns lost. It started 12 years ago. It ends tomorrow night. In the most important triple threat in the history of this industry, I will sacrifice everything to make sure that this business, this company, and this industry move forward in the right direction. And that's not a prediction. That's a spoiler. They are
tremendous promo.
It was a really great promo from Seth Rollins, who has been like really one of the, you heard about this three-way, and I think a lot of people initially, they wanted just the Punk Reigns thing straight up, but I think Rollins has been exceptional in all of his segments that he has helped make, and this was a real I thought this was the better go-home promo than the end of the show, to be quite honest. I thought it was that good, and this was also the only representation of the triple threat on tonight's show. We didn't have Roman, and we did not have Punk on the show.
I think this is about as good as a shoot style, you know, promo. Clearly, it is what it is that you're going to get in WWE. And Seth delivered it really, really well, hit all his beats and, you know, made it pretty real at the end, you know, when he was talking about his stepdad and so on. So, yeah, all credit. I agree with you. I think he's really talked himself into a high position in this match.
Do you think that they are overtly hinting at the Heyman alliance? Are you feeling like that is a good climax to this, or do you see this going another way on Saturday?
I think whoever Heyman aligns with in the triple threat is going to win it. Mm-hmm. And that's what they're dangling out there. And we think it's going to be Punk, or is it? And the possibility of him aligning with Seth here is very strong. And I think if we're going to get into the predictions game, I would even probably give that more than a third, more than the classic 33.3% chance that that.
Did you hear the Bron Breakker promo today?
I did. Actually, I was going to mention it during the news because I sat through the kickoff show. And of course, there was really nothing too newsworthy about it, but The Braun Breaker Steiner Math promo was tremendous.
It really was great. It was really, really great. I don't know if it would have like really fit for him on TV, but in that setting on the stage, the crowd loved it. They ate it up. Yeah, it was the only thing on the kickoff that I did see, but it was really well done by Braun Breaker going through the four way and his chances to win, which are something like 129% chance of winning. Yeah, and we will go over the card, the night one card at the end of the review, but into the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal. Do you know this is the 11th one of these?
Feels like it.
Yeah, I mean,
I couldn't name 11 winners of it, but yeah.
Yeah, we had last year's winner, Bronson Reed, who was mentioned during this, and our participants for this year's, if I got them all here, Rey Fénix, Shinsuke Nakamura, Pretty Deadly, Andrade, Santos Escobar, R-Truth, Tozawa and Otis, Carmelo Hayes, Carlito, Angel Umberto, Joaquin Wilde, Cruz del Toro, Ludwig Kaiser, Pete Dunne, R-Truth, The Miz, Karrion Kross, The Creeds, Chad Gable, Dragon Lee, Tyler Bate, Grayson Waller, and Austin Theory. And the announcers even brought up that all of them have a chip on their shoulder for not being booked on the WrestleMania card, so they're going to make them regret that decision when the time comes for next year, because I am sure that this will go into the matchmaking stories for next year's show. We also had two Bloodsport winners represented here. Karrion Kross has had more matches this week than he had all year. So everyone just goes to brawl, and Carlito and Truth, the two veterans, just stand in the middle and they're just like not doing anything. Carlito has his apple, and then Truth eliminates Carlito, and then Miz kicks Truth out. And man, was this crowd sad to see R-Truth go almost immediately. And then we're just going through lots of eliminations. Pretty Deadly are both eliminated by A-Town Down Under. Bate tries to skin the cat. He's drop kicked out by Kaiser. Santos is actually showing respect to Rey Fénix, but then when he turns his back, Fénix tosses him out. So that would seem to be a direction for Rey Fénix. Andrade eliminates Waller and Theory. The Luchadors all worked against Chad Gable to eliminate him, which made sense. Karrion Kross eliminates Del Toro and yells at them, "Rey is using you." And with that, Dragon Lee comes off the shoulders and eliminates Kross. And even Kross, the Las Vegas guy, got some boos here that he was eliminated as well. So that was kind of noteworthy. Miz is constantly saving Carmelo Hayes, which would be something that would come up several times. We get to the final four, and it's Nakamura, Rey Fénix, Carmelo Hayes, and Andrade. Nakamura is seated on the buckle, so Andrade drop kicks him out. Then, as Fénix goes for his goodbye amigo kick, the rope walk, El Grande Americano from the Gulf of Mexico pops up out of nowhere with the mask and knocks Fénix off balance, and he is eliminated. So we are down to Hayes and Andrade, and they just went at a crazy pace here. They mentioned their seven-match series from last year. Hayes with a La Mystica double clothesline spot. They're both down. The crowd's into it at this point. Both balance on the second rope, and Andrade just gets flipped over from his leg being thrown out from under him. Carmelo Hayes wins in 15-28, and The Miz is congratulating him. Definitely was not my thought of who I, when I saw this, the cavalcade of who was in this match, I thought, man, they're probably just going to give this to Rey Fénix, like some babyface win, but they went with Carmelo Hayes. And, I thought for a battle royal, I felt like these guys, like they worked at a pretty good pace. And once it got down to, the final four or so, like they worked like really hard. And this was not just like you're kind of going through the motions battle royal. Like I thought this was at 15 and a half minutes. Like I thought this was fine for what it was.
Me too. I'm not a big fan of the Andre battle royal or any of these matches where everyone's in the ring to begin with. It's just so, such a mess, you know, but the, as you say, 15 minutes, and they got rid of half the field pretty much within the first few minutes, which was, you know,
it wasn't slow and plodding. That's exactly pretty much my bar for a battle royal on television. So they achieved that. This was much better than the Sin City scramble I saw yesterday. Wade Barrett has a sit down interview with both Charlotte Flair and Tiffany Stratton. We hear first from Charlotte. This was interesting. Last week, our criticism was the follow-up to Charlotte and Tiffany was they just went right back to wrestling program building 101. We're doing pull-aparts. We're just doing our usual cliche build-up. This week, they decided to make the segment from 2 weeks ago in Chicago the focus. Like, it was literally, you have Wade using the term that it went off the rails. Yeah. And it's like, it's a wink and a nod that yes, this did not go as planned, but now there's all this interest in their match. They've somehow got this real grudge conveyed to the audience. And so they tried to play it up that way. We can actually talk about both segments now. So Charlotte, she's just saying, I don't love it, but now people are really invested in this match, which is kind of an understanding that they were not invested previously, which is not a lie. And then later we got Tiffany Stratton, and she pretty much just lays out the story that she's like, this created a lot of buzz, perhaps for the wrong reasons. Wade is the one who says perhaps for the wrong reasons, and it went off the rails. She said, I felt bullied in the lead up. She brings up the split screen segment and said there was a moment in that segment that I was very discouraged and thinking maybe I'm not cut out for this. Like, she just got trampled in this segment. And that's, you know, she really, at least in her words here, was like really like came away like she just got just torpedoed. But she left, did her research, and came back in this promo segment with Flair. Now she might not like me, but she has to respect me, and I stood up to a bully. I thought this was far more effective than what they tried to do last week, which I just thought was such a not capitalizing on this silver lining that came out of this segment, that realistically, now that we look back at it, it's the full oxygen that this program has is that segment and what they were able to convey. And I think some curiosity now to see how this match comes off on the weekend.
Agreed. Yeah, no, we said it all last week about the physical angle. It was a bit of a cop out after getting some real life sort of steam behind this match. And it's a pity that they didn't follow it up with something like this last week but we're there now.
Yeah, again, this was very brief. It was like 2 minutes of the show, but it didn't need to be much more than this. And I think the segment, it served what it needed to. Rhea Ripley is out. This is her sixth WrestleMania, but it's also the most important one. I was waiting for her to say, you know what? This is almost as important as the one with Charlotte. I put this in my top three. But she was distracted by Belair, lost her title, but she's not going to complain. But she will be a three-time champion after Sunday. Io comes out in this cool looking card outfit for Vegas. We'll get into it. There were several performers on this show who felt like they had WrestleMania weekend gear created, probably with the hope of being on the show, and they're not booked on the show. So we'll talk about that. So Belair is out. She definitely got the most boos here. And as she is talking about winning the title, Naomi comes out, because I guess Bianca has not been on SmackDown at the same time as Naomi since their whole falling out. So Naomi says, I've called you, I've texted you, and I know you got it because it said delivered. And why aren't you speaking to me? Jade was never there for you like I was. Naomi is so awesome. I love her in this promo style.
Sort of almost jilted lover kind of crazy person. She is doing it to a T. It's brilliant. I'm really enjoying this.
She's going to finish it tomorrow. And then Jade comes in and she gets into the ring. So we've got both programs represented here with the connective tissue of Bianca. And Rhea steps up to Jade saying, this doesn't concern you. And that allows Naomi, who has fleed from Jade, to come up from behind and shove Jade into Ripley. Everyone starts brawling except for Io, who is like Carlito in R-Truth, just like left to watch the carnage. And again, they're like, look how overlooked she is. And she ends up taking out the women on the floor with the moonsault to the floor. And I think like this is I think they've done like a pretty good job of kind of marrying, like, whoever comes out of these two matches should probably be positioned. And you could see that it would make a lot of sense for Belair to win this, although they're really giving you the sense of like Io's been like the overlooked one and she could retain. But I just think there's a lot more opportunity with Bianca, but it also might not need the belt. So I think overall this was good for both programs.
I think so too. My only quibble is that the physical booking hasn't really matched up to the level of Naomi's character work, which I think has been superb. Like we just said, every time Jade actually physically gets her hands on Naomi, she gets the better of her. So my fear is that there's going to be a very brief match between the two of them with Jade dominating. And I think that would harm what is a tremendous character in Naomi. I hope that's not what transpires.
American Made are making fun of Phoenix after he lost in the Battle Royal, courtesy of El Grande Americano. Dragon Lee walks up and tells him to shut up. And then Rey Mysterio, in this this Dean Malenko shirt he was wearing, comes in, and they issue a six-man tag team challenge for later tonight. The Street Profits against the Motor City Machine Guns for the tag titles. The Profits here, these were the first two that this looked like. This was some pretty nice gear that they had, maybe that they were hopefully walking into a stadium with, but more to come on that. The crowd is chanting, "We want the smoke." Heat on Saban for a while here, and then the Machine Guns are in. They double-team Ford. Hawkins interrupts the Skull and Bones, so Ford does his big somersault dive over the corner post when all of a sudden DIY jump the barricade, attacking both teams, and they steal the tag titles at 8.5 minutes. And this crowd, I'm sure they were all thinking, okay, they're going to make the match for this weekend. And we would get the culmination of that in a few segments after. First, Aldis is with the Secret Hervis, who called last week's countout a travesty, which, as we would learn afterwards, was a screw up. Like, that was not meant to be a countout in 2 minutes. So after announcing the six-woman tag for tonight against Katana Chance, Caden Carter, and Vega, now Aldis, who has been served with a complaint by Green, is making a rematch between Green and Vega, with Niven and Alba Fire not able to be in her corner. So Green has to go it alone, so she throws a tantrum. Then after the break, Aldis prevents DIY from leaving the arena with the belts, and the Profits and the Machine Guns storm into the shot, and DIY reluctantly hand over the belts. And then Nick Aldis says, "I've had enough of you. Next week." And he stops, and this crowd, when they heard "next week," they just booed, because that was the signal they're not getting their Mania match. And they announce next week a TLC match in Fort Worth, Texas, for the tag belts. So after all this time, no Mania spot for
after all teams. This time, after his whiteboard explaining how everything had worked with this tag division, it's not happening on Mania. And it is kind of amazing that the tag division on SmackDown, which has taken up so much of the show in recent weeks, particularly since it's gone to 3 hours.
Don't tell me for a second that this was the plan a week ago, when Miz and Hayes are running down the Street Profits and burying the tag titles that are not part of the WrestleMania card. And then nothing with Miz and Hayes this week either. It just felt like very just.
That segment last week makes zero sense in this context.
This is not a match that is driving any like business for WrestleMania, but you know, you have your big programs that are locked in and stuff, but the bottom of this card, this has a total like fly by the seat of our pants kind of feel. It is what it feels like. Like this one probably just came down to timing, you would think. And it's being just punted by a week. So,
yeah,
but it does one that, seem- I mean, this is a tag program that's like, they've been building this for months at
weeks and weeks with various teams. And it just feels like, you know, the tag division on Raw is two teams. It's basically non-existent. And the fact that it gets onto WrestleMania and these guys don't, I do feel a bit sorry for them in that respect.
Hackers don't need much. Just one leaked password can potentially unlock a treasure trove of personal information, leading to stress, pain, and permanently wrecked credit. Don't be an easy target. Get protection by Aura today. Aura protects your identity, finances, and family, all in one powerful app. Get real-time alerts, safeguard your accounts, and block scams before they happen. If identity theft strikes, we help you recover. Stay protected at aura.com/listen. That's aura.com/listen.
Randy Orton came out, and he's still got no match for WrestleMania. Like, no follow-up on the Solo Sikoa stuff last week. Like, that was just, again, like, it just feel like they did this whole brawl to the back, and I guess they just got to the back, and they shook hands by the end. No bad blood between these two after that big brawl. He said his father was at the first WrestleMania. His was in 2004, his first year, and he is not sitting out. This will be his 20th Mania, and so I'm going to let the audience decide. It's like, how is the audience deciding this? That's my question. Are we all going to vote on who his opponent is going to be? So he is issuing an open challenge for Sunday for anyone with wrestling boots to show up. And I guess we can just you've obviously got to have someone that is going to, I think almost anyone is going to get that pop just because it's Mania and it's a probably a return of someone, but it also has to be someone of a level, you would have to think. Like I throw it like a Jeff Cobb, and I just don't know if that would be my introduction for a Jeff Cobb, that he would be of that level to people.
An almost certain loss at Mania in his
That's the
debut.
Other thing is that, I mean, hopefully whoever it is, you kind of have to have like a pretty great match, because I don't see Orton losing this. And I didn't even think about this till I heard part of Levesque's thing on Pat McAfee, is that, like, you know, he's going over like the schedule. He's like, you know, and then we have Raw the next night, and 3 weeks from Sunday, we've got Backlash in St. Louis. I was like, that's how close the pay-per-view is. And like, I totally see Orton was probably going to beat Kevin Owens, punt him for the big pop, and that sets up a big title match for him in St. Louis next month. And I think that's got to be the plan. Like, he goes over and he's got a big match in St. Louis next month. You know, Wei even suggested, like, you could get Cena and Orton as Backlash. Like, that's very possible. So, yeah, this one's going to be interesting. Like, you would look at your candidates being, like, your Aleister Blacks, your Miros. I just Jeff Cobb to me would just be, I feel like that would be, I don't know. Do you think Jeff Cobb would really, like, that would be one where I just don't think you're going to get, like, the big crowd response for that one, even though they could have a killer match together, but you will be, like, do you see those three as your candidates?
I just think I know that it's a harder core fan that will go to WrestleMania. I still don't think that Jeff Cobb has the recognizability really to get a big reaction if he's the surprise opponent. Miro / Rusev, if he returns, that would get a bigger reaction. But again,
especially if he comes in a tank.
Certainly, yeah, with Lana, perhaps. That's possible, I guess. It's unfortunate, but here we are.
There was footage of Drew McIntyre and Damian Priest brawling at the kickoff, and then Saxton with Priest. Priest is done answering questions about WrestleMania. Drew didn't show up tonight. You're not a victim. And he basically says, you're not ready for this violence. I'm going to beat you so bad, you'll wish you were future endeavored again. I'm going to bury you.
His voice is getting deeper every week. He seems like Darth Vader this week. So
yeah,
it almost felt like it was being put through a changer, you know.
Chelsea Green and Zelina Vega, non-title match. And we have Charles Robinson, who was the referee last week. So big Chelsea chant at the beginning here. And it was funny. Chelsea was warning Robinson not to count her out. So naturally, they did do the count-out tease where they both just beat the count at 9. At one point, Green, like, barely connected with this kick. Green is in control, puts her onto the turnbuckle, but Vega turns it into a code red off the turnbuckle and pins Green in 3.5 minutes. And Zelina Vega was the other one. She came out in this big flame outfit that looked looked above the profile for just another week of SmackDown.
Certainly, well, even the hair, you know, was very intricate.
It does make you wonder if, like, this was just the scheduled finish that they were going to do last week.
Could be. I'm not sure. I didn't love the match. As short as it was, it was pretty messy. The finish was good. Quite a bump for Chelsea on that super code red from the ropes.
Yeah.
But I don't think these two gel well together. Well,
they're going to have to again, because obviously we're going to do the title match now. Like, this is like such a weird setup. Like, they did this, like, it was like 6 weeks ago. She announced she was going to go through the Secret Hervis, and then in her first obstacle, loses to Piper Niven. And then it was like just dropped for a few weeks ago. And then we restarted it. We had the messed up finish last week. And then she's just going right to Green, and we'll get another title match at some point. So there you have it. I can't say this is one that was at a level where you would have expected it to be on either night this weekend. This is destined for TV. LA Knight and Solo Sikoa. This was a non-title match. Knight cuts a promo that he's took out Tama. Now it's time to take out Sikoa. Fatu's destroyed everyone in his path, but he's never faced someone like me. He says, Fatu, chances are you'll be a champion one day, but I'm not about chances. I'm about guarantees. Whatever that means. So Knight charges at Sikoa, gets thrown into the steps. We come back from the break. Sikoa's in control, and then Knight makes a comeback, hits a DDT, and then as he is placed onto the turnbuckle, Fatu shows up, attacking Knight for the DQ in 6:55, outruns Braun Strowman to help, and Nick Aldis makes a tag team match with LA Knight and Braun against Jacob Fatu and Solo Sikoa. And people on the USA Network would not have seen this, but there was the point during the commercial where Fatu does scream out, "I love you, Solo." And the announcers are like, "We haven't heard that in a long time." Mm-hmm. But it was done during the commercial. So I don't know why it was done there, if it was supposed to be some kind of a plot point, but that was there. Strowman Express is hit. Jacob Fatu hit one of the worst looking DDTs I've ever seen to Braun Strowman. I don't know if this was just Braun being off timing wise taking it or both of them, but it just looked horrible. Knight comes in, knocks Fatu off the apron, and then Fatu's grabbing his knee, but he'd return for the save. Strowman with a pounce sends Fatu out and then runs around the ring and is tossed over the desk. And Knight drop kicks Fatu through the ropes and is left alone with Sikoa, ducks the Samoan spike, hits the blunt force trauma, and pins Solo Sikoa in 7 minutes and 50 seconds. It is somewhat remarkable to see like where Solo Sikoa is now that the card is set for WrestleMania. He does not appear to be Randy Orton's dance partner. And here was the guy that, I mean, you know, he was just like the collateral damage here to set up the bigger match for the weekend.
He was the guy in the new bloodline for a while and seemed to have the screen presence, but as soon as Fatu showed up, he was outclassed in pretty much every department, and I guess that's the way they're booking it. I didn't particularly enjoy this, particularly the sort of Teddy Longing of the whole thing into a tag match so close to the singles match between two that
Nick all just knew. It's like we're getting to the third hour and I don't have all my segments booked. I got
exactly. Yes, so. It's just the issue with these 3-hour SmackDowns, I think.
Then it was the Tiffany Stratton interview and into the six man, Rey Mysterio, Dragon Lee, and Rey Fénix against Chad Gable and the Creeds. And the main focus of this is the status of Rey Mysterio, because early on in this match, Julius yanks Rey from the ring to the floor. And then there is a break in here. We come back. Rey is never involved in the match again. He is not on the apron. He has just vanished. He's on the floor. And then after the match, you see the trainers checking on him. His partners are Dragon Lee and Rey Fénix are going to check on him. And then I saw a video that some fan shot where they're, yeah. Did you see this as well, Neil?
I did, yeah.
They're carrying him to the back and they are putting no weight on him. So this looks to be a leg or an ankle or a knee, something, that is certainly like they were not letting him put any weight on the one leg. So I would say his status is at best questionable. And his match is supposed to be tomorrow. You don't even have it until Sunday. Unfortunate that, you know, there may have been a last minute injury here to Rey, which, I mean, for booking, like, yeah, you could swap Dragon Lee or Rey Fénix in. It's not like this crazy shift that you've got to make, but it would be really unfortunate because I think Mysterio and Gable was a match that people were looking forward to seeing this, like, hopefully, like, get its, like, you know, 12, 13 minutes on a Mania card.
Absolutely. I was looking forward to it too. And from a storyline perspective, people were looking forward to seeing, you know, Grande Americano getting his comeuppance. It's a good thing that he has teammates here, which if they want to, they can sub in Fénix perhaps.
So. It's an easy swap, but a real unfortunate, you know, the night before WrestleMania. Very much so. And I don't know if it was this spot, but I think that was the only physical spot he had, was the yanking spot that, like, I went back to look if there was anything else, and I don't think it could have been anything else but that, because that's all he did.
I don't think he was even tagged at any point. I think this was a run-in to break things up, and then he was dragged out of the ring by his leg by Julius. I was watching through the breaks at this point because I started on time tonight, and he just disappeared from that point on. He was just never tagged.
It was just like a freak thing on the landing is probably what it was. The match went 10 minutes and 11 seconds. So it was pretty much 3-on-2 for the whole match. You know, the American Made, they did some cool things. They did a 3-way flying headbutt onto Dragon Lee simultaneously to set up the commercial. And in the end, it's a Fénix who launches off the shoulders of Brutus into a Rana, sending Gable out. Then the goodbye amigo kick to Gable. Operation Dragon sets up a Meteora by Fénix, and he pins Julius in 10 minutes and 11 seconds. This was like, given who was involved here, I mean, it was entertaining, kind of lucha-based five-man, we should say, because Ray really was not a factor in this match. But yeah, more of the focus is just going to be on the status of Ray. And you could see it afterwards where everyone's checking on him, and then they just cut to Joe Tessitore and Wade Barrett to get away from that. There was a music video for Reigns, Rollins, and Punk, Sail Into the Black by Machine Head, that Neil will be downloading as soon as we finish. And then the final segment, Cody Rhodes comes out, and, you know, he gets the regular pop coming out to his music, and then the music ends, and there are a fair amount of boos for Cody Rhodes.
Yes.
Would you say the most boos Cody has probably gotten in his WWE run? Like, I cannot recall this amount, and it would get more louder once Cena came out, because before Cody can even speak, Cena comes out in his Las Vegas apparel that they will make a goddamn mint off of selling this weekend. There are dueling chants of "Let's go, Cena! Cena sucks!" and Cena starts off the promo: "Shut your mouth, kid. This is my 20th WrestleMania and my 12th title match. And this Sunday is my last WrestleMania, and no one has the courage to end their career like I am. There is no way for Cody to prepare for a man who knows he's going to die. People believe that he'll come back, and there's no such thing as a wrestling retirement, because all other wrestlers that retire are insecure losers who need these fans' validation, and to talk about them, because when they're left on their own, their empty lives are what they have to fall back on, and they're forced to crawl back. I've got a wonderful life. I don't need any of you. I'm taking this title from you, Cody, and I am taking it away from all of you forever." He says, "This belt that you will never see again. I told you last year that every day you hold the belt, it gets heavier by the day. And on Sunday, it will be too heavy for you to continue carrying. You don't write history. Winners do. And when I won at Elimination Chamber, I knew it would be impossible to beat you in a match at WrestleMania. But all of that changed when I heard you turn down The Rock, because you chose to do what is right instead of wanting to win. I know that you don't stand a chance, because I have proven these people don't matter. And when you stop caring, Cody, then you'll start accomplishing things. But you're too weak to understand that. And to beat me, you're going to have to choose on Sunday to do what is right, or do you want to win? You are scared, insecure, and naive." I thought Cena was tremendous here. I thought this was probably my favorite promo he's done in the lead up to this. This was the first Cena heel promo where it's not like I've even been like too negative on it, but there's been such a like pantomime of like,
yeah,
this guy that's like assuming that this heel role and just feels like he was being so just, it wasn't natural. This was the first time that I felt he really got into like this heel persona, and it wasn't just this like over the topness that there was more than a tinge of in some of the other promos in European cities.
Just the grumpy face and the kind of, you know, stomping down to the ring, and it was a bit kind of heel 101. And what he did tonight, of course, was give us something that we can hang our hats on for The Rock involvement at Elimination Chamber. Sort of, it's tenuous, but it's something. I wish we'd had it earlier, to be honest. But this choice, he said, you know, he didn't think he could beat Cody. He thought he was unbeatable until Cody did what they, you know, those dirty ass fans thought was right, instead of what he needed to do to win. And I think it's not what I thought we were going to get after Elimination Chamber, but it's good enough of an explanation for the Rock's involvement here. And I just wish it had come a few weeks ago.
Yeah, he ends his portion by stating, "To be a winner, you have to sever ties with losers in your life. Cody, you blew it. You're a kid in a man's world, and you don't have the balls of the last real champion." So now it's Cody's turn, and as he has the mic, now he is swarmed with boos. Yeah. I mean, this was like, take your AEW segment of choice, where he was getting these reactions quite frequently toward the end. And he really just had to battle through this. And I can't imagine he was expecting this much of a negative reaction to him, but it was pretty sizable. And it does make it interesting what the crowd reaction will be like on Sunday, because so far, like, it's been, it's been mixed. It's like it's been pro and negative Cena, but it hasn't been so much like booing of Cody in any of these segments.
Yeah,
it's
we've had
more so. Yeah, it's just almost like it's the Cena seesaw. But Cody explains this is who you first he's being booed, and Cena, who's just on his feet here, just points, this is who you fight for. And he's like, this matters to you that you're being booed. And Cody, like, I bet this audience couldn't even hear his first lines out. There was so much boo saying, you said you don't bury people. Well, there's a graveyard of talent that argue otherwise. And they wouldn't even let him, like, get this audible. He then points his direction to members of the production team ringside, asking if you know their name. And Cena's got to play oblivious to who these people are. He says, it's a new WWE. Cena, you're overrated, overbearing, out of touch, out of time. Your face is melting wax. You've got a stack of dimes for a neck, spindly ass legs. You're paler than Sting at Starrcade 1997. And when this, I would imagine, fairly hardcore crowd heard Sting and Starrcade 97. Cody got these fans back. They're like, oh yeah, old name, WCW pay-per-view. And it was like, I thought some of this verbiage was totally cringeworthy, but listen, it did sway the negativity towards Cody, so it worked. He says how you've called me an errand boy, yet the whole world saw you walk naked onto the stage at the Oscars for the people that you now run errands for. It's 2025 and you still can't wrestle. And the crowd now is all chanting, you can't wrestle. And Cena just calls them idiots. He says, I don't have to wrestle to beat you. And then Cena hits him on the side of the head like a little tap.
They replayed this several times. My first note was thumb to the eye, and then
that's what I thought. I rewound this. I'm like, he had to have thumbed him to the eye, and no, he just gave him
it's like this tiny karate chop to
side of his head. And Cena had to sell this like he's just been kicked in the balls, because he keels over and Cena pops him up for the AA. And you think, okay, he's going to lay out Cody, just like he laid out Cena before. But no, Cody pops off the shoulders and a second time hits him with the crossroads. And for the second time, Cena is left laying. And that's the end. And boy, did they have time to fill here. They had like 2 or 3 minutes. So they just went through the whole card. And then we go back to Cody, who's just smiling at the entrance. And that was the final segment going into the show. It was a good segment. I guess it was, in terms of, if you're looking at this from like the baseball analogy, I would say this was a double at best. This was far from a home run segment. And I mean, here we are. We are now at Mania, and not even a sliver of a hint of a Dwayne Johnson appearance. So if he is showing up on Sunday, they're going to just do it for the surprise and not for anything that is. I think there's an expectation that he is there. And I think if he's not there, you will have some people that are a little disappointed that he's not there. And I think more questioning of this whole turn if Dwayne Johnson is not even part of the big match at the end of this whole thing.
I think perfectly valid questions will be asked about this entire, you know, the entire angle at Elimination Chamber just being, you know, an availability of Dwayne Johnson, if he doesn't appear tomorrow. I half expected that he might be on this show, and he wasn't. We got the mentions, we got some explanation, which is tenuous, but it's something that makes halfway sense. So I agree with you.
Cena is explaining basically without The Rock, he had no chance of beating Cody Rhodes, is his argument.
Yeah.
So,
but I agree that also it was very obvious that to me that they had time to fill. And I just wonder, was it the Rey's injury? Because that match went fairly long anyway. But something undershot the runway here, because it was very obvious going through the entire card, the number of replays they did of the crossroads.
They really had the stretch at the end. If you stuck to the end, Joe Tessitore did his sign off about, I'm paraphrasing, but he's like, sometimes There's events where you just have to use your eyes to take in the show. And he, it's like this rallying call for all of the fans out there, from the hardcores to the casuals. I was like, this guy's great. He's just great. And there you go. That was it. That was your go home show. Neil, in terms of your level of interest for both nights of Mania, how did the final show just, accentuate any of that interest going in? How did you feel they did for their last TV?
Honest answer, not much. And it's just the time, the 3 hours that they've got to fill on a Friday night of the weekend of WrestleMania. And there was too much here that was made for TV that didn't really matter going into this weekend. And that's fine. You know, next week we're probably going to see with Mania in the rear view, we're probably going to see Aleister Black. Yeah, Aleister Black. But really beyond Seth's pretty stellar promo at the beginning, there wasn't too much on the show that got me amped for tomorrow and for Sunday. I'm still looking forward to WrestleMania as I always do. And I think it, you know, it's going to be two good shows, two nights in a row. But this show, all it did was illustrate once again, and stop me if you've heard this before, John, that 3 hours is too long for this Friday night show.
I think they could go longer, to be honest. When AEW does some of these 4 hour blocks, I mean, we're just getting ridiculous. Like we need some laws signed into like wrestling, a cap on length of wrestling television shows.
Support for this post-wrestling podcast comes from those of you who have picked up our merch over at Chalk Tees. T-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, and hats from post-wrestling and our network of shows, including the NWA Podcast, Poison Rana, The Long and Winding Royal Road, WrestleNomics, and MC Later. Free shipping to almost anywhere in the entire world. No minimum spend required. That's chalk-tees.com/post-wrestling.
Let's quickly go through... We're going to go through the first night of WrestleMania only here. So... your card, your seven matches for Saturday night, Roman Reigns, CM Punk, and Seth Rollins in the most important triple threat match in the history of men competing in the genre. Tiffany Stratton defending the women's title against Charlotte Flair. LA Knight defending the U.S. title against Jacob Fatu. Jade Cargill against Naomi. El Grande Americano against Rey Mysterio, to be determined, I guess, pending what has happened with Rey. The War Raiders against the New Day for the tag titles, and opening the show is Gunther against Jey Uso for the World Heavyweight Championship. So give me some of your thoughts on night one. What are you looking forward to? And any thoughts on the
looking forward
Saturday?
Forward to quite a bit. I mean, I think it's a good idea to open with the World Heavyweight Championship match. It's the best spot for Jay, the Royal Rumble winner. If he's not going to actually get the closing main event, I still think he'll get his moment. He's very likely to win that match, in my opinion. I was looking forward to Rey, El Grande, and El Grande Americano. At this moment, that's a 50-50 proposition at best that match will even happen. The World Tag Team Championship match, I'm just not invested in. I really don't care about that. If it was there in attendance, that might be my visit to the bathroom.
I'd be somewhat surprised if New Day don't win the tag belts, unless they want to
agreed
this a bit further. I just think there's a lot more with the New Day as heel champions coming out of this. Jade Cargill and Naomi's a when you're looking at both nights in terms of performers that I think have a lot of pressure on them. I think Jade Cargill is like very high up there. She needs to have a really great performance here. I think the story almost dictates like Jade has to win this, but man, Naomi is just so on fire that like a loss isn't going to extinguish her because she's just, she's really hot coming out of this. And she's got the grudge with both Jade and something with Bianca potentially coming out of this that I think she can take the loss. I just can't see them beating Jade just the way this story has gone. Unless you are, I can't even imagine Bianca necessarily getting involved in this when she's got the match the next day. That's probably like a post WrestleMania type of follow up that they do there.
Yeah, I agree. My only hope, like I said earlier on, is it's not just a squash match for Jade because, as I've said, when Jade has got her hands on Bianca, she's battering her, you know. So it's. I hope they make it competitive in some way.
You know, we potentially get two title changes earlier with Jey Uso and the New Day, possible. Do you see a third one here with LA Knight and Jacob Fatu?
I do, actually. Yeah, I think it's, I think they see such an upside in Fatu. LA Knight is over, like Rover, with the crowd, with or without the title. I think they'll put a crowning moment, perhaps, with Jacob here, and having him, just that little tease of him holding the belt last week, you know, is sort of, it looks good with him, you know. I think he's going to win.
Tiffany Stratton and Charlotte Flair. So here we are, and I do think there's a lot of interest in this match. And I do think, like, the booking of this match is also, it is kind of interesting. Like, if you were to describe this to me, like, 6 months ago, is that Charlotte's coming back from this near career-ending injury, and here is Tiffany Stratton, who is really hitting her stride as a heel. Like, you would have thought, like, the role should be reversed here, but it's like Charlotte as a babyface has just been, you know, a square peg in a round hole for all of these years that I think you have. And yeah, it's like, certainly you could go really either direction on this one. I'm almost like not as like the outcome to me is less interesting than just seeing the match itself, because these two are certainly capable of having an outstanding match together. And I think that's part of the intrigue of this match, is just seeing what they produce at the end of all of this.
Yeah, I agree with you about that. I think it's probably more likely this feud will continue beyond WrestleMania. I think now that they've got some legs under it and this kind of worked shoot thing that they're doing,
then Charlotte should probably win if they're going to continue this.
If they're going to continue it, I think Charlotte should win. I agree.
And then Reigns, Punk, and Rollins. What if I tell you, not including the entrances, just bell to bell, if I say 40 minutes, are you taking the over or the under?
I go over. I'll take the over.
Over. Wow.
Those entrances.
No, long. I'm not including the entrances.
Just not including the entrances. Itself. I apologize, John. No, I'll go under then.
Roman might hit 40 on his own, just entrance-wise. So, yeah, we'll see. I mean, this one, it's like, this is one I just think the audience, they're going to be so sucked into the story of this. And really, the main player is Heyman in this. I think that is going to be what everyone is focused on. Is Heyman going to screw one of these guys? Is he going to align? Who's he going to align with? They've made that such a focus. And I'm more so interested just to see the layout of this match, because this is one where I think there's just an enormous expectation for them to close the show, for it being Punk's big main event match. Mm-hmm. And quite frankly, I think Rollins will be kind of the star of this match in that sense. Like, I think he's a huge, huge addition to this match, even though there was like criticism at first of him being involved in this. But overall, like, I think they're going to have a really well thought out match, and hopefully some really cool plot twists to have a lot of your interest coming out of this match, and however they follow going out of this for all three.
I agree. I think it's going to be very interesting to see how Heyman sways this match for whoever he ends up aligning himself with, because he's the guy who takes the odd bump. But I mean, what is he going to do to sway the match in favor of the person that he wants to win, which if I were a betting man, I'd say is Seth. I think there's a bit of intrigue there.
Seth winning.
Yes.
Yeah, that's the same as me. I think the finish to do is, whether it's something that Heyman is involved with, however they get there, it's Rollins pinning CM Punk. And after, you know, losing to Punk and being just totally can, like, Punk has had this guy's number, and then in the biggest match of Punk's career, yeah, Rollins beats him, and it's this mark of shame that Punk leaves his first Mania main event with, and potentially with like the betrayal of Heyman in there as well. So, yeah, I think you could totally see Rollins winning. And to the argument that the winner of this, like, you should have your automatic challenger for Cena coming out of this, I don't think there's a rush to get to Cena with Reigns or Punk at this moment. Like, you could do Rollins, but in the immediate, like, I totally, like, when Way suggested Cena and Orton in St. Louis, that one made almost too much sense for me, that I could totally see them doing that. So I don't even think that's the case, that you could have some like these three still being tied to each other and Heyman being with his new gun in Rollins or something else they have up their sleeve for this. But I think this is going to be your, this is going to be your big booking match where hopefully you tease some cool things coming out of it.
Yeah. And I think it'll hold the crowd's attention. 40 plus would be an ask, but it will be lengthy.
All right. I'm going to make the decision. I'm just going to, we're just going to stay on the free feed here, for this piece of feedback that we have. And then we're going to wrap up the show again. Neil and I are back on Saturday night as soon as WrestleMania ends. And, Seth Rollins is, celebrating on top of Allegiant Stadium with Paul Heyman. Flip on over youtube.com/postwrestling. We'll get one in here from Jurassic Park fan who asks, hello, John and Neil. Hope you're both doing well on this WrestleMania weekend. Randy Orton versus Rusev at WrestleMania, revealing at WrestleMania itself means Orton's opponent must be someone big. Pretty satisfactory final segment between Cody and Cena, but did John Cena just confirm his turn at Elimination Chamber was off the cuff and that The Rock's throat slit gesture was also just done in the hope that Cena in that moment would acquiesce? How embarrassing would it have been for The Rock if the segment had just ended with Cena raising Cody's hands, staring him down as the show went off the air? I mean, that's what you are led to believe, that Cena did not make the decision until Cody turned him down in that final segment.
We talked about this last week as well, John. I mean, we've talked about you and we have talked about this as well. The gesture thing has never made sense since it happened.
But I still personally feel like Cena is playing heel, and the "Let's go Cena sucks" chants again tonight, along with the boos, which were more frequent deeper into the segment, shows that the fans don't quite want to boo him, but will play along because he's still a great performer and they respect him. Cody's portion was good in addressing how WWE has changed since Cena's time on top, and mostly just readdressing other past points he has made, but with great babyface fire. I don't think they smashed it out of the park, but it was two great talkers trying to sell this as a match that could change WWE forever if Cena wins. Do you think tonight sufficiently clarified The Rock's intentions at Elimination Chamber, and does he get involved in this match on Sunday? Yeah, we've kind of gone over this. I'd say no, I don't think they have. Let me just put it this way. I feel more stronger by each passing show that I would have held off. If you were going to do this turn, it made a whole lot more sense to do it Mania, and I will feel 100% definitive by Sunday if something incredible is not done that kind of reverses all of this.
If The Rock is not physically there on Sunday, it goes double. I mean, John, so.
And even if he is there, it's like he was not there for any of the build. And I honestly believe, and tell me if you disagree, Neil, but if you could have made the focus of Mania, like, here are your two massive stars at this dream match, and the big focus is him going for this 17th title. And we're talking about like four Cena segments to do with Cody during this whole buildup that I think you could have got there. And The Rock then shows up at Mania and we find out the lengths that Cena will go to win this final championship. And he needs The Rock. And he realized at Elimination Chamber, then it makes sense. I've had 2 months to think about this and I've questioned if I can beat Cody. And I had to go this direction with The Rock at WrestleMania, and boom, then you shoot this angle on Sunday and you get all of that same fanfare that you had back in February, but now we can really go to town with it. And I just think that would have things would have been served a lot more. But I mean, I can't downgrade the fact, like, that night after Elimination Chamber, like, you just had people talking about this is one of the greatest angles of all time. And on the night it felt like it, all these weeks later, I can't say this has felt like, you know, this generational turn that was capitalized upon.
Looking back on it since, and what's transpired, or rather not transpired since, it all looks a bit janky. And even remembering The Rock's press conference about the rarefied air and all the rest of it, he was in retrospect, the Hogan levels of myth-making there about, you know, how this was all a long-term play and all the rest of it. Yeah, I agree.
But we don't have the Rubik's Cube, Neil. We're not 5 steps ahead, but there you have it. All right, that's going to wrap it up. Thank you to everyone that has been checking out all of the WrestleMania Week shows and staying up with us tonight. Final note for the shows that are coming up. So on Saturday, noon Eastern at postwrestlingcafe.com, Kate from Montreal and John Cena are live. They will be chatting about spring break and all the other events that were happening on Friday. Saturday night, Neil and I are live. And then Sunday, live at noon here on the channel, it's Brayden and Davey. And then we conclude our WrestleMania week coverage Sunday night after night two with myself and Wei Ting. I am all out of words at this hour. So we're going to sign off. Big, big thank you to Two Way Ray for,
thanks, Ray,
all the help, behind the scenes, keeping this show crystal clear and running like a smooth operation. So thanks to everyone for, tuning in, and we will speak with you Saturday night after WrestleMania. Good night.
If you work in quality control at a candy factory, you know strict safety regulations come with the job. It's why you partner with Grainger. Grainger helps you find the high quality and compliant products your business needs to inspect, detect, and help correct issues. And the sweetest part is, everyone gets a product that's as safe to eat as it is delicious. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger. For the ones who get it done.
Hi, Drew and Jonathan Scott here, reminding you that a lot of life's firsts are better with help from American Family Insurance. Like your first home expansion or your first big lightning strike. There's a first for everything. Get the right home policy at the right price with the right help from American Family's agents. Life's better when you're under American Family's roof. Insure carefully, dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.